Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Hi, this is Tracy Hales-Bass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking with Gary B. Vogel about Skyrider, Park Van Tassel, and the rise of ballooning in the West. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm great. Now, you're in San Diego right now?
I am indeed in San Diego, California.
But the book you've written here, Skyrider, Park Van Tassel and the Rise of Ballooning in the West, it starts off in Albuquerque, right?
It starts off in Indiana with Park being born there, and then quickly to California, but then right away to Albuquerque. That's correct.
Albuquerque is important for its love of ballooning, I think.
Right. So today we have such a wonderful diversity of hot air ballooning, modern hot air ballooning that has made Albuquerque its home for late 1960s, early 1970s with the balloon fiesta. But Park Van Tassel was the first to fly a balloon in Albuquerque and in all of New Mexico, actually, with a flight in July 4th of 1882.
Right.
His first balloon flight ever. But he was, you know, attempting what no one else had attempted in the area, to see if he could go up in a balloon, and sure enough, he did.
He did. It was fascinating to see the different variations of balloons that he tried. I mean, there was gas-filled, and then before he even thought about going to hot air.
Right. Yeah, the balloons back then were quite different. And early on, gas ballooning was the way it was done, typically using coal gas. So they would burn coal in a special environment and collect the gas that was the offfluent from that coal being burnt, and that was lighter than air that would allow some lifting capability. It's not usually as good as the hydrogen we might use today for balloons, but would provide an inflation. And then you'd capture that in a bag, effectively, and then have a valve at the top you could use to release the gas if you wanted to come down. And if you wanted to go up while you're up in the air, you remove ballast from your basket and throw the ballast overboard. That'll make you climb because you're lighter.
Right.
Then later in his days, he started using what are called smoke balloons. These are balloons that are basically cloth bags that you hold over an open fire and collect all the heat and the smoke from the fire below, hopefully not putting the balloon on fire. And these balloons had no way of regulating their rate of descent. So once they're going to go up, they're going to go up and come back down again, and there's no valves for changing the rate of descent. These balloons were used generally for going up and then jumping out of with a parachute to come back down to Earth using the parachute and letting the smoke balloon come back down as it may without anyone on board.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very different ways of getting it set up. The gas balloon ascensions back then took a very long time to inflate the balloons. With the flight he made in 1882 in Albuquerque took 2 days of inflating a very large gas bag with the city's illuminating gas. Mm-hmm. It was basically the entire city gave up its gas for 2 days to get this balloon two-thirds full. And that was enough to lift him up to 14,000 feet on that first flight.
Right. And sometimes they'd go through all that and the crowd would get really impatient, but they still couldn't do it.
Correct. So, you know, again, this is early days of ballooning, mm-hmm. especially in the American West. Ballooning had come to the East Coast in the even late 1700s, early 1800s, and was used on the East Coast. Balloons were used through the Civil War for reconnaissance, things of that nature. It took a long time for ballooning to come to the West. Ballooning came to California in 1853, and it's the first known flight west of the Rockies. But it then took time for it to get to all the other territories in the Southwest, especially New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado. And Van Tassel was the one to kind of bring it to the West and making these traveling exhibitions with balloons. There were not many people doing that at that time. So every one of these events was its own challenge, and to get it right took a lot of trial and error, really, to get it to work. And he had lots of errors to start with. Again, his first successful flight was in Albuquerque, but even before and after that, he still had troubles until getting to Utah. And then after that, he kind of started getting the hang of it. But yeah, very difficult to do it, even at those times. 1882 is not much known about aviation in general.
I held my breath every time I read about him ascending, because it was always a gamble, and he had some experiences with bad luck along the way.
Oh, absolutely. And as the story, lots of good luck and bad luck. And
yes.
These are all very dangerous events. You know, you're risking your life every time you go up. Every time he was doing these events, though, I imagine trying to be this aerial exhibitionist, making that your career in the Old West was quite the challenge. You have to not only have a balloon, but then haul it around on train from city to city. And each city is going to pay you to make an exhibition. And of course, once they've paid you a considerable sum, you really want to perform.
Right.
You don't want it to be a fizzle. So there's a lot of pressure on doing this. And then, once you do a successful thing, you go on to the next town. And as he was doing this early on, there weren't that many competitors. He was pretty much on his own traveling around at the beginning of his career in 1882. But by the mid-1880s and into the 1890s, there were a considerable number of other people doing these kind of aerial exhibitions, kind of like P.T. Barnum or Buffalo Bill Cody, and traveling around giving shows for paying customers.
Mm-hmm.
And with the competition, he had to figure out how do I up my game? How do I make things even more enticing for people to come see me versus someone else? And the idea of going up in the balloon and then jumping out of the balloon with a parachute was a Van Tassel invention, specifically to increase the odds that he would have success at having large crowds, which he did.
Right.
And so that parachute invention is another really amazing accomplishment of his. There had been other people that had invented parachutes. He wasn't necessarily the first, although he was credited in the papers at the time as the first. But in the West, again, we were very isolated from the East. And despite the fact that someone had flown with a parachute in 1819 in New York, by the time Van Tassel and a colleague, Thomas Baldwin, were inventing that in San Francisco in 1887, really they thought they were doing it on their own, and they were inventing it basically on their own again. It became a very interesting, not only is it dangerous to just go up in a balloon, but then it's even more dangerous to have the guts to jump out of the balloon and come back down by parachute. Hopefully that's going to work. So, yeah, very exciting exciting exhibitions for thousands of people to come watch this happen.
And I love that you covered the controversy to having women jump.
When Thomas Baldwin and Park Van Tassel co-invented this parachute, a flexible parachute, in 1887, Baldwin was the first to try it. He was already a trained trapeze rope, tightrope walker, and really an exhibitionist. He really didn't mind going out and risking his life. Van Tassel, on the other hand, was a little more timid about these things, and it took Van Tassel some time to come up to the "I'm going to jump out of a balloon with a parachute" concept, even though he had co-invented it. His wife Clara really was the first woman west of the Rockies to make a parachute jump. She jumped before Park Van Tassel decided to jump. And so a very brave woman did that over Los Angeles, California, successfully. And then Van Tassel took ballooning and parachuting with a traveling troop to the world, Hawaii and then Australia, Southeast Asia, India, Africa, Europe. And as a part of those tours, really helped introduce women to this parachuting idea. So, for instance, the first women to fly in Australia were two women from Van Tassel's troop doing parachuting in 1890. And these, again, very important women, especially during the women's rights movements of that time, showing that women could do everything that men could do, even better. And that was really amazing. So amazing was that when these two women did these events in Australia, they were immediate national heroes, and 100,000 people would turn out at each jump to watch these women do these exhibitions. It's kind of like a SpaceX launch today, or Apollo, that kind of a thing. I think today we look at ballooning, and although it's a magical amazement when we see so many balloons flying at Albuquerque for instance, for the Fiesta, just as I was had the pleasure of being out there, you know, for this last Fiesta, and that was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But we almost take it for granted that it's so easy to do, and it's so safe, and it's, you know, everyone's having a good time. But back then, one balloon in the sky was its own magical feat, because no one had ever seen anyone fly before. And especially in the Old West, it was just no one's ever seen it. I mean, you could go up in a balloon, that's amazing. It's like a magic carpet. So people paid money to watch these events just to be a part of that excitement.
It became ever popular. And one thing you mentioned was that after they had one of their accidents, it made it even more popular, almost like the audience was trying to make sure something didn't happen or see something dangerous.
Exactly. And so this is another very interesting highlight of both American, Australian, and cultural appreciation for dangerous things.
Right.
You know, it's very fun to read these papers back in the 1890s because they describe all these events. And the newspaper reporters were clear to sort of highlight the most thrilling parts of the adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And these women, these very, very brave women, would do trapeze work underneath the balloon while connected to this parachute. They would do trapeze work on the way up. There's no netting. There's no ropes. It's just them and the bar. And that was thrilling. But then even more thrilling would be if the parachute didn't open right away or something else happened.
Right.
And they were grabbing on by one hand and still they're barely surviving. Wow, that was amazingly exciting. And newspaper writers would describe these events in almost gloriously depth-defying details. And very, very, very exciting, very Evel Knievel kind of time frame.
Right. Park Van Tassel, what got you interested in him?
Great question. So I have had a lot of enjoyment researching early aviation, mostly in the West, and mostly focused on gliding history, the early efforts for motorless aircraft. Mm-hmm. It turns out that here in San Diego, we have a great affinity for gliding, just like Albuquerque, New Mexico has an affinity for ballooning.
Right.
San Diego's the capital of gliding. And one of the earliest pilots to fly gliders in America was a gentleman named John Montgomery, who flew here in San Diego in 1884, just shortly after Van Tassel flew his balloon in Albuquerque with control in glides off of mountainsides here.
Hmm.
And I had the pleasure of writing his biography, and that was published in 2012. It turned out that that Montgomery continued on gliding up in the Bay Area into the 1900s. And it also turned out, as I was writing that book, that biography, that one of the balloonists that was helping him lift gliders aloft into the air, and then he would release from the balloon and come back down with the glider. Instead of jumping with a parachute, now it was coming down with the glider, something else for the crowds to witness. One of the balloonists that was helping him was this gentleman, Van Tassel. And at the time I was researching that book, I was so focused on Montgomery, mm-hmm. I didn't really have time to figure out who Van Tassel was. I happened to connect with a gentleman named Dick Brown,
mm-hmm.
who is a Hall of Fame balloonist who helped set up the International Fiesta at Albuquerque, and another gentleman named Rick Van Tassel, who is an indirect descendant of Park Van Tassel and a very good researcher of the Van Tassel family history.
Ah.
And I connected with them, and then it turned out I was giving a lecture at the United States Southwest Soaring Museum in Moriarty, New Mexico, about the Montgomery Fellow. And sure enough, Dick Brown was kind enough to come and meet me there, and he handed me a USB stick of all these old newspaper articles of Van Tassel.
Oh.
And he said, "You got to read this, you know, take a look at these puzzle pieces." And it was very exciting because they both collected quite a lot of information, but it was kind of like having a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, and you're only handed 200 pieces, and you know that there's a lot that's missing.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting when you start piecing together the pieces, and you realize, oh, I've just kind of generated a new piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the other interesting thing was that Van Tassel traveled so much and so fast, which was so rare back then, that newspaper writers would write about him in each city, but he's only there for the weekend, so he disappears from their ears. So they have to find out where he goes next. And go to those newspapers and research there, and you find him, aha, and he's gone again. And it really became a very fun historical jigsaw puzzle to put together, especially when he went abroad to Australia and Southeast Asia and India and Africa. I had the pleasure of working with librarians around the world to piece this story together.
Wow.
It had never been pieced together. And so it's very amazing
mm-hmm.
that a gentleman named Van Tassel flew a balloon first in Albuquerque, And then that same person is the first to fly anything in Sri Lanka. He's the first balloonist and parachutist in Sri Lanka.
Right.
So people in Sri Lanka know that Park Fantastil is their hero of aviation, their first aeronaut ever. But they have no understanding that he came from Albuquerque. And people in Albuquerque have no understanding he ever got to Sri Lanka.
Right.
And so this story pulls those two together and brings Albuquerque to the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
and the importance of what ballooning is in New Mexico to the rest of the world. And it's just nice that the world comes now to New Mexico for ballooning,
mm-hmm.
and Park was the first to bring it to the world. And that's a nice arrangement. So I'm really glad that this book kind of put all that together for the first time.
It really did. How long did you work on this?
Yeah, it was about 4 years or so of piecing things together. When I was about 80% complete, then the question becomes who's going to publish it and such. And immediately I wanted to go to the University of New Mexico Press because it's clearly a New Mexico story.
Right.
And I was like, you guys have to publish this. You know, I'm not going to accept any other offers. You have to do this. And very kindly they agreed because they saw the breadth of what I was doing. And they've been wonderful to work with. It's been a pleasure to work with them, and they're great at mm-hmm. helping to promote the story and New Mexico's history.
Yes, they're the ones that sent me the book and said, look at this.
Yeah, good. Okay, I'm glad they made you aware of it.
Me too.
Yeah,
me
too,
because it is fascinating.
Yeah.
I had no idea that this one man had such a big hand in promoting ballooning.
Correct. And also skydiving. So, I mean, it is the case that we remember for the ballooning, but you know, co-inventing a parachute back in 1887 is its own miracle.
Oh, yeah.
And surviving all of it. And,
right.
He made several jumps where the parachute wouldn't open right away, and he'd fall, you know, 500 feet, and then finally it would open so fast that he nearly lost his grip on the bar that he's hanging onto. And just, you know, crazy adventures like that. There were also, he was such a famous name at the time, as the great Professor Van Tassel,
mm-hmm.
that there were other people that masqueraded as him around the world, making their own attempts to make money. And so there are a couple of events where at least one person nearly died in India, having gone up in a balloon, parachuted, landed in the Ganges River, and was taken downstream. It's clearly not the real Van Tassel, because the real Van Tassel was not in India at the time.
Wow.
But someone else, you know, in a nearly death defying manner, masquerading as the great Van Tassel. So it was full of irony, all these misadventures and things.
A lot of the people that worked with him took on his name and presented themselves as this big family.
Right. And that was actually more common at the time. There were, of course, again, as time went on from when Van Tassel started to the 1900s, there were people all around America that started doing these kinds of aerial exhibitions and taking this on as their career. And they would go as, you know, Professor so-and-so or Madam so-and-so
mm-hmm.
to make their name more honorific and things, or the great so-and-so. And it was the case also that if they traveled together as a group, they often would share the same last name to be a family. It was also the case that many of the women doing these adventures at the time, no, it just was not a time when women did these things,
mm-hmm.
and they were pushing the envelope of what women's rights would allow. And so often they changed their stage name. They took a stage name so that necessarily people wouldn't know who they actually were. And so it was common for the women in Van Tassel's troop to adopt his last name, having no relation to him whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah.
That must have made research a little complicated.
It was very complicated, and in fact, unfortunately, some of his women associates, at least one of his women associates, died
mm-hmm.
as a result of one of these parachute accidents. Jenny Rummery, who at the time was Jeanette Van Tassel.
Mm-hmm.
And when she passed, because she was rather unknown at the time and only known in India, international papers assumed that she was one of the other women that had been previously associated with Van Tassel. So they were reporting the death of Gladys Van Tassel or Valerie Van Tassel.
Mm-hmm.
When I was researching this, and you're like, oh my goodness, Valerie died, oh my goodness. And actually, I ended up finding out that it wasn't Valerie, but it was some other woman associated with Van Tassel. It was a very, very, lot of weird dead ends like that in the story that, no pun intended, that made the story even more interesting to write. And I'll add that, unfortunately, Van Tassel passed, he led a very long life. He passed away in 1930 in Oakland, California, having brought ballooning back from India to California, helping start up recreational ballooning clubs in the Bay Area and doing that as an elder statesman of ballooning. But he passed away in 1930, and his family really didn't have money to bury him with a marker. So he's remained, I did track down where he's buried.
Wow.
He's buried in an unmarked grave in a cemetery in Oakland. That alone took a lot of effort to try to find.
I bet.
But I've set up a GoFundMe campaign to try to raise money and awareness to put a plaque on his grave in next year. So I have a GoFundMe campaign. You're please to go look that up if you'd like to contribute to the raising of money, Park Van Tassel grave marker. Okay. And then in addition to that, I'm hoping in 2022 or slightly beyond to get a plaque arranged on the site of his first launch in Albuquerque, which would be the location of the first spot of anything aviation related to New Mexico. And that's in downtown Albuquerque. I believe it's Golden Second Street, if I'm remembering it correctly. But right now it's a parking lot. And it really deserves to have a marker there saying that this is where aviation began for New Mexico.
That would be great.
Yeah. GoFundMe, if you look up Park Van Tassel grave marker.
Okay.
You can be pleased to have anyone interested donate and help in the cause. I've been pleased to be giving these kinds of discussions and lectures to both Oakland and Albuquerque, New Mexico, and there's great interest in Oakland to help preserve and this history and get that marker established. So we're going to be doing that one for sure.
Now, are you a ballooner?
So, great question. I've been up in balloons. I'm not a pilot myself. I had the pleasure when I was in high school here in San Diego to work my summers as a part of the chase crew for a balloon company.
Mm.
That was my first involvement with ballooning. And that was a lot of fun because back then when San Diego wasn't as huge as it is now, you get to drive the van through all the old dirt roads and chase the balloon with radio and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of dramatic fun. But I never had the chance to go up when I was in high school. They always offered that if there was an empty spot, I'd get a chance, but I never did get a chance.
Hmm.
So when I finished my schooling and came back to San Diego, I immediately went up in a balloon flight with my wife. And then just a year ago, as COVID was, we were getting over COVID and the pandemic and hopefully ending, we went up in a balloon flight with our daughter as well to give her a chance to see what that was like. Because I figured I got a balloon book coming out. I better have taken my daughter up on board.
Right.
And we had a great time. It was a lot of fun. I love ballooning, and it was just so spectacular to see not only the 400 balloons in the air at the same time at the Balloon Fiesta, but to see a huge crowd of wonderful people enjoying ballooning and aviation all together in Albuquerque after having the COVID experience and being shut in for a year and a half. It was just a wonderful thing to be outside again. So Albuquerque knows how to celebrate balloons.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And another thing, though, you talk about in the book is how people remarked on the wonderful scenery they saw and what the view was from up there over and over.
Right, exactly. At the beginning of Van Tassel's career in the 1880s, of course, very few people had even seen anyone go up in the air in a balloon. And then by the 1890s, people had seen that, and now it was like, I've never seen what my city looks like from the air. What's an aerial view look like? So it turned out that William Randolph Hearst, who at the age of 24 had just become the editor of the San Francisco Examiner, hired Van Tassel to take a photographer aloft and take pictures of San Francisco from the air.
Mm.
And they repeated that with the Los Angeles Examiner, also owned by Hearst. And those wonderful photos of those cities from the air really captivated the audience of the readership of those newspapers, helping Hearst and his career forward as an editor and newspaperman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just amazing that, you know, today we can just go hop in a balloon or go fly in a commercial jet, or we just take this aerial view so much for granted. But back then, no one had even seen what it looked like.
And they were awestruck.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
So now you work with a San Diego State University.
I do. So I'm a man of many hats. I'm adjunct faculty at San Diego State University. I teach a very introductory course on aerospace engineering to freshman students. My background, though, I've had a whole lifetime in model airplanes. I've enjoyed radio controlled model airplanes my whole life. I've had the pleasure of setting a few world records and national records with those with that fun. And I bring those into the class, and I have students build model airplanes as a part of their learning experience to teach them the basics of aerospace. It's a lot of fun. But my other day job is that I'm CEO of a local computer science company here in town called Natural Selection Incorporated, and we use machine learning and AI to help solve really complex problems, mainly in biology. So I get to work new diagnostics for different diseases and things of that nature because my PhD is in biology. So I have a very eclectic background of aviation, biology, and computer science.
You certainly do.
Yeah.
So that makes
sense. But the books are a fun diversion. I enjoy writing. Usually I've been writing these kinds of books when I'm on flights between San Diego and the East Coast for business. I instead of watching the movies, I'm writing a book.
That's how you fit it in, because you've got your plate
pretty
full.
Much.
Yeah. And your research is just incredible. I noticed the various and sundry places you found your research. So,
thank you.
When you were talking about a puzzle, I went, yeah, I can see that when looking at the references.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the pictures are great, too. It's amazing.
Yeah, so we were very pleased that there weren't that many photos. Again, unfortunately, part of the experience of moving from town to town so quickly and also being in the 1880s when there weren't a lot of cameras around, was that there just aren't a lot of photos. And so we searched high and low for these photos and found several, both in the Smithsonian, in collections in New Mexico, even in Australia. And, of course, the good folks in Australia didn't ever realize that this gentleman was connected to ballooning in New Mexico. So for them, it was an eye-opening experience, too. And many archivists there are just as happy to have this kind of historical book because it helps explain the roots of their own aviation history.
Right. So do you think that ballooning informed gliding or plane flight or anything?
Yeah, so... They're very different ways of using what nature gives you. So the one of the wonders of gliding and soaring is that as a pilot, since you typically don't have a motor on board, you have to understand the atmosphere really well. Mm-hmm. And in order to stay up in the air, if you want to increase your time, you have to find areas in the atmosphere that are lifting, that are going up, and then circle in them or stay in them in some manner to increase your duration, your fun. And your altitude is your fun for a glider. In ballooning, it's very much the same. You have to be a very good pilot to know what the wind directions and speeds are like at different altitudes. And so really understanding the atmosphere and what the atmosphere gives you each day is part of it's the synergy between the two. But, of course, they're very different in the way you fly. A hot air balloonist today, unlike a Van Tassel and the gas balloons or the smoke balloons, a balloonist today has a propane tank and a burner. And if you want to go up, you just pull the burner and you create more hot air as you go. And that back in Van Tassel's day, that was not even understood yet. Right. So you can really, I think, have far more control now in a balloon versus back in the 1880s. And in a glider, it's just like a plane, a normal plane, but without the engine. So you can steer around and fly wherever you want to fly. You just have to read the atmosphere very well. And so, again, very different types of flying, even, I would say, different types of pilots, but all sharing this very green aspect of how you fly through the air, making use of what nature gives you.
That's amazing. And I think a lot of people think that's fascinating and will love to read your book to find out more about
that. Well, I'm hoping so.
Yes.
I'm hoping that it becomes popular, and I hope it opens some eyes in New Mexico about the importance of what the state, what the territory brought to the rest of the West through Van Tassel's help. Just appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and inform your listeners.
Well, I appreciate the hard work you've put into this book.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. And that was Dr. Gary B. Fogel talking about his book, Skyrider, Park Van Tassel and the Rise of Ballooning in the West. This is Tracy Halesvass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.